Hello and welcome to another episode of the Why We Love podcast. My name's David.
And I'm Moxie.
And this week we are talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, 10-year anniversary coming up.
Oh, is it 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years. I can't believe it's 10 years ago.
Oh.
It doesn't feel that long ago.
I was 15 when this film came out.
I was 28. No, 29. Talking bollocks. 29.
Wow, you were like, back then you were older than I am now.
Oh, don't. That's cruel and unusual. Don't, no, no. Help the aged, come on. Yeah, it doesn't feel like 10 years ago. I saw it in the cinema twice because it was so good. and yeah, that doesn't feel like 10 years ago. But there we are. So how did you come to Scott Pilgrim? Did you go to... let me start that again because that's nonsense I just said there. what I meant was... You've read the books now because it's based on a series of like graphic novels, right?
Yeah, I've read some of them. I've just started volume 4, so I've read the first 3.
Yeah. What do you think of the graphic novels? I've never read them, so.
Well, they're very, very good. I do like them. The art style I really like as well, because it's like faux manga. But like watching the film again, because you know I said to you the other day that the graphic novels were like a lot more out there than the film was.
Yeah.
They're not really. It was I was just reading it, I was like, God, this wasn't in the film, and then I watched the film and it was, and I was like,
Fine, I'll be wrong.
Yeah. In fact, there's not that many. Like, it's as if almost all the dialogue was like lifted from the books and just planted in the film.
Yeah.
And reading volume 3, which deals with Envy and Evil Ex-Boyfriend number 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's really weird because there's like a whole different set of events which aren't in the film. But are like transplanted. So, you know, in the film, you know, where Ramona has the fight with Roxy and she has the big hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a fight Ramona has with Envy in the graphic novel.
That's right. I read about that on, I think it was the IMDb trivia page. Yeah, I read about that.
But yeah, and Knives is a lot nicer in the books as well. No, wait, no, hold on. Nicer in the film. She's nicer in the film than she is in the books.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because it's... Oh, because, like, in the books, like... Well, in the film, when, like, she finds out Scott's with Ramona, she just, like, dyes her hair.
Yeah.
And, like, starts dating... Is it Young Neil?
Young Neil. Yeah.
And it's just a bit, like, standard, everyday, normal, like, ex-girlfriend cattiness sort of thing.
Right.
Whereas in the book, she just, like... finds where Ramona's gone shopping and just attacks her with some knives. It's just...
Okay, interesting. Interesting. What's Ramona like in the books? Do you get a better sense of who she is?
Ramona's... Well, apparently... Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator, apparently... I don't know how true this is. Didn't think you did... So, volume 5, which I haven't got to, is referred to as, like, Ramona's book.
Right.
Because it fleshes out her character.
Okay.
Where I've got to, again, it's weird because all the dialogue that she says is virtually the same as the film.
Yeah.
But whereas Mary Elizabeth Winstead's doing this, like, cold, detached, like, almost bored-sounding voice.
Yes, yeah.
The facial expressions drawn in the graphic novels are like, there's a playfulness to it more so than just a boredness.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying Mary Elizabeth Winstead isn't amazing in the film, because she is.
I knew that was coming.
It's the Winstead factor.
I get it. I do think she's very cool and everything, but her character is very hollow. For example, aside from knowing that Ramona dyes her hair once every like 2 weeks or whatever it is, and she likes tea, we know nothing about this girl.
Yeah.
Like nothing. We don't know her likes, her dislikes. We don't know what she does in her free time. We don't know. And because she doesn't give a lot of expression, like you said, it's quite kind of deadpan and almost bored looking.
Yeah.
I often find myself thinking, aside from the hair and the roller skates, what's cool? Like, what's going on? Why the big fuss over Ramona Flowers? Because she doesn't have that charisma or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
No, I do get you, but I think, and it's only from watching the film a second time round, I was like, I wonder if, and I, again, this may be just giving the writers and the direction way too much credit that they don't deserve, but the whole film's like kind of a joke about video games.
Yes.
Could it be that her essentially being a nothing character is a joke of video games? Because in things like, I don't know, let's pick a video game series that people love and I haven't played, Zelda, it's just like, there is Zelda, you love her, go rescue her, but you know,
go rescue her, yeah,
piss all about her.
Yep, I definitely think that's part of it. I also think that we're seeing Ramona through Scott's eyes, and because he dreams of her before he sees her, she's literally his dream girl, so she's almost like a token or something. She's, I don't really know how to explain it, my brain's switched off. Not enough coffee. But do you see what I'm saying?
I think so, but to be fair, the dreaming is because there's like a subspace highway going through his head.
Yes.
I love, which is one of the things that's like directly lifted from the comic.
But yeah, I thought it might be.
But I'd forgot was in the film. There's just a bit where he's like, I dreamed about you and you, is that weird? And she's like, no, it's like really, really direct right through your head.
Oh, that's what I was saying. Yeah, so because she's the dream girl, we're literally just getting the surface of who she is.
Yeah.
And not her as a fully rounded, three-dimensional character. But that's a minor gripe, really. Because I do love the film. I think it's fantastic. It's so much fun. I was talking to my husband before we started recording, because I was like, what don't you like about, you know, Scott Pilgrim? It's all well and good talking about what we like, but what don't you like? And it was quite an interesting conversation. And I started saying about how she's just a little bit hollow. They kind of dropped the ball, I feel, a little bit. They could have done a bit more to give her a bit more oomph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Were you waiting for me to finish my thought and I just left you dangling?
What? No, I was just saying that, like, I do agree with you that, like, her character is a bit hollow, but...
Yeah, just a bit, you know, they could have done, I don't know what, je ne sais quoi, they could have done something just to flesh her out a little bit more, because, literally beyond we know she likes tea and she dyes her hair, I don't know who Ramona Flowers is.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit frustrating. But like I said, it's a minor gripe in amongst an amazing film. I mean, we talked about it briefly, I think, before, about how it was a box office bomb. And I wasn't really sure why that happened. Do you have any thoughts on that?
On why it was a box office bomb?
Yeah. I have a couple of theories, but...
I was going to say... it could have been that it was like... It was based on a graphic novel that I would say wasn't, like...
It was pretty underground.
Yeah. And... I mean, I don't know, because the other Edgar Wright films did well, because he'd done Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz by...
Yeah.
So I don't know why. So people liked Edgar Wright at that point.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Or it could be, actually... They liked Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, and it just so happened that Edgar Wright was the director. Could have been that.
It could have been, but I think he's such a distinctive director that people will follow him. You know, we came from Spaced and, you know, went on to do the films, and because he's just such a... He's got such a specific way of shooting and editing and, you know, framing shots and stuff. I think there would have been enough people that were fans of his. But I don't know if it was a marketing issue. I don't know if it was... I mean, it was up when it was released. It was up against Eat, Pray, Love and something else.
Oh, yeah, that masterpiece.
Yeah, well, it was hugely popular. And there was something else massive. I don't know, it might have been a Harry Potter or something. That came out at the same weekend and obliterated anybody else who released a film weekend. Or it could be that it's just a little bit ahead of its time. You know how that is with some films? It gets released and for whatever reason it gets overlooked, and then 5 years later, 10 years later, people reevaluate it and realize that they were sleeping on genius.
Yeah. Like, probably this is an obscure, like, comparison to draw, but I'm going to draw it anyway. Event Horizon.
Okay.
When that came out, people hated it.
Yeah, they did. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So good.
I love that film.
Yeah, Event Horizon. Oh, maybe that's a future episode. Event Horizon.
Yeah, definitely, because it's definitely Paul W.S. Anderson's best film, probably.
Yeah, it's so good. Anybody who's listening and you haven't seen Event Horizon, go check it out.
Yeah, it's excellent. Like, if the way I describe it is, forget Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal. Forget that for a second, because they are...
Doom Eternal? Was that like a sequel?
No, Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal are games.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I was thinking of the film.
Yeah, no, but they very much have shaken up the shoot 'em up genre in a way that would not translate to film. But Doom, the Dwayne the Rock Johnson one, that was meant to be like an adaptation of Doom 3.
Right.
And it was not well received by anyone. But if you want a film that's essentially the perfect film adaptation of Doom, and I mean the old Doom games, then Event Horizon is probably the closest you're going to get.
Really? Okay, I know nothing about Doom and all those video games. They are not my genre when it comes to video games. I'm a basic bitch.
You're in
I like
space.
Sonic the Hedgehog. That was my era.
I like old Sonic.
I like what's it called? Mortal Kombat and Tekken and Soul Calibur and beat 'em ups. And Sonic. Yeah, and Sonic. Oh, and Crash Bandicoot. Those are my video games. So I'm not really qualified to talk about video games, but that's interesting. Yeah. I also think that I mean, it sounds kind of silly because at the time when Scott Pilgrim came out, I felt like the culture, if you will, that he was presenting in that film with the video game references and the music, and that was my reality, if you will. You know, because my husband was in a band and I've been to thousands of gigs, and it just all felt very accessible to me. But when I think back, actually, even though it was only 10 years ago, if it came out now, everyone would get every joke. Everyone would get the references, the tropes, the things that he was doing there. Because I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like video games and superheroes and all that kind of jazz is very much a current thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, obviously people were playing video games hardcore 10 years ago, but your average person on the street might not know, you know, the names of the video games or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like Scott Pilgrim really was a few years ahead of its time, and maybe that's just why people didn't click with it at the time.
Well, I think as well, and there is a... I mean, it is... It's... I don't think... I mean, the comics don't... The comic, like, the things that the comic draws on and the thing that the films draw on...
Yeah.
...are two different things. Like, the comics are very much drawing on anime. You can really tell. Because, you know, I think in the film it's like a throwaway line where Scott says something about... how he ended up dating Kim was he had to fight 90 guys and then he beat up a big purple dude.
Right.
And he says something like that in the comic. Like, that happens, you see that fight early on.
Yeah.
And there are some bits where it's just like, what on earth is going... Like, there are some bits that are, like, not in the film that are in the book. And I think the books are drawing on anime influences.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
you can thingy the vegan ex-boyfriend. Yeah. Like, he looks like, when his powers are activated, kind of like he's going like Super Saiyan from like Dragon Ball Z. Whereas the film is more... I mean, in the book, when they die, they explode into coins. That's still there.
Right.
But the book, I think there's more of a draw on anime stuff, whereas the film, it's all video games. I don't think there's any real anime tropes in there.
Yeah.
And the one thing that is referenced in the film, don't know why, because it's for about 5 minutes at most, Seinfeld.
Yes. I like that bit.
I love that, but I was just like, why?
I suppose it's like the classic sitcom setup, isn't it? Because he's talking to Wallace about, you know, his girl problems, basically. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that bit. It was a nice little reminder. And speaking of Wallace, Kieran Culkin steals the show, in my opinion. He's so good. Him and, is it Alison Pill? Who plays Kim, the drummer?
Yeah.
Those two steal every scene they're in. I don't care what's going on. I don't care what character is on the screen. I'm watching them.
That really threw me. Because I had seen Scott Pilgrim a couple of times back when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Forgotten about it. Well, not forgotten about it, but like forgotten some of the faces.
Mm.
And I watched The Newsroom.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
I didn't like The Newsroom. I was disappointed.
Oh, it's fun. Well, okay, well, you've wounded me with that. I didn't like
I'm
Baby
sorry.
Driver. So.
I wanted to like it so much because it's Sorkin, but...
Yeah.
No.
Sorry,
I'm interrupting.
No, it's fine. But I really... When you said, oh, right, I was like, oh, she hasn't seen it. I can recommend The Newsroom. And then
yeah. Sorry. No.
It's fine. It's fine. It's not like that. I have a T-shirt with "On a Mission to Civilize" written on it. That's not a thing I have.
I see. Okay.
But I loved the newsroom. But Alison Pill was in that.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
So I got used to her looking like that, and then. I knew she was in Scott Pilgrim. I was like, who does she play? And then, like, I was like, oh, hold on, I recognise that face.
I had a similar thing with Alison Brie. My husband mentioned something about her being in Scott Pilgrim, and I was like, what? And this is a while ago, before Captain Marvel or whatever her name is. I was like, what? I don't remember her in that. And he said, yeah, she's the singer from Clash at Demon Head. And I was like, what? No, it isn't. That's not her. I was going to argue that. I was ready to fight. And I was totally wrong. It is her. And she looks so different.
Oxy.
Yeah.
It's Brie Larson.
Thank you. I knew I was getting the name wrong. I was like, that's not Alison Brie. That's the girl in Community. Isn't it? That's Annie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, because when you said she looks so different, I was like, well, to be fair, if she thinks it's Alison Brie, then yeah, she does.
Yeah, she would look pretty different. Yeah. No, sorry. Brie Larson.
Fair enough.
I was close.
You were. Whose character in the book has brown hair?
Oh.
She's like really ordinary looking.
Okay. Yeah. Like, interesting.
She has like the swooshy coat and stuff, but she has brown hair. But yeah.
Oh.
But,
how dull.
Yeah, well.
No offense to any brunettes out there. I'm a brunette myself, originally, naturally. I'm, you know, green right now. Because I hate that. But.
I thought it was your natural hair color.
What, the green?
Yeah.
It is my natural colour. What was I saying? Yes, Alison Pill and Kieran Culkin just totally steal the show for me. I think they're so funny.
Yeah.
A brilliant, brilliant casting choice. What else was I going to say about that? I'm sure I had another note about those two. But I can't seem to find it, so perhaps I'm talking nonsense.
I like that Anna Kendrick was in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, isn't she Scott? Well, she's supposed to be Scott's
sister.
Old sister, younger sister.
She's...
Yes. Because I swear I read somewhere that she's the younger sister, but she calls him Big Brother. Or something like that. No, it's the other way around. He's her big brother, but she calls him little brother because, you know, he's a mess. And it's kind of, you know, ironic or whatever. Which is an interesting point, actually, to get to, because Scott himself, he's an asshole. He's a bit of a douche.
Yeah.
Is he like that in the comics?
Yeah, I mean, apart from like the, like, I think he's not, I don't want to say fine, because everyone at that age is a bit shit, but like, I don't think he's like necessarily a bad guy, but like the, like, it's, but the way, I think the way he treats Knives, though, is appalling. Mm. Because yeah. he should have just stayed single and waited for Ramona.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like he's obvious, like it's obviously that he's with Knives just as like
a rebound.
Yeah, and a way to like relieve boredom, sort of thing.
Yeah.
In the film, he comes off a lot nastier, I think.
Yeah.
When he dumps Knives, that's like really mean.
Yes.
I think, whereas in the comic, he's not purposefully mean. Like,
he's just thoughtless.
Yeah, like she says, she hasn't said she loves him. But she keeps trying to, but he like keeps cutting across her, and then I think he says something, he says about breaking up, and she's just like, oh, okay, and they just like kind of part, and it's just like, it's like a bit of a blow, but it's not like truly awful.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film, the way they do it, it's like really, really, really nasty.
He's awful. He's an awful, immature, narcissistic, selfish, bitter douchebag, really. I mean, from like the get-go with his whole, oh yeah, check me out, I'm dating a 17-year-old Asian girl. Aren't I the coolest?
Yeah.
You know, from that, right the way through until he starts to realise that actually he needs to step it up and, you know, change himself if he wants to better himself and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
He is pretty awful. I hate the way that everyone treats Knives. It's not just Scott. And I think with the character of Knives, it makes it even worse when... Oh, and this is a weird thing, and I want to get your take on it.
Okay.
There's quite a bit of casual racism thrown Knives' way. And I appreciate that they're probably trying to make a point of how, you know, first of all, racism can be totally casual. It doesn't have to be, you know, forceful, I hate XYZ. It can be microaggressions and whatnot. I get that maybe they're trying to make a bigger point. However, personally, I feel like they failed, and it just comes across as people are horrible to Knives the whole way through the film, and they occasionally throw some casual racism her way. Did you pick up on any of that? Do you have any feelings about that?
I think with them generally being horrible to her, I didn't... The film plays the harm or the, like, mishaps that she gets into for laughs more than the book seemed to.
Yeah, see, that's another thing I was going to bring up with the Knives character, is when the vegan ex-boyfriend hits her.
Yeah.
And he's all like, oh, I'm not afraid to hit a girl. And then young Neil says, you hit the highlights out of her hair.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to laugh. And don't get me wrong, it is quite funny that somebody punched the highlights out of someone's hair. But considering Knives has been shat on by her boyfriend, cheated on by her boyfriend, dismissed by the whole band, nobody really wants her there, and then she's the one that gets hit, and nobody does anything. Nobody says, hey, that's not cool, you shouldn't do that, or XYZ, you know. Nobody reacts to it. It's just kind of a, oh, that happened. And as much as you can probably defend some of these choices and whatnot, it just feels like Knives just gets shit on the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the band hating her being there. Well, no, the band... I don't think the band does, because Thingy, the lead singer, whatever his name is... Steve? Is it Steve?
I think it is, yeah.
That sounds like a name someone might have. Well, let's call him Steve for the moment.
Let's call him Steve, regardless.
Yeah, he likes her being there because she gets overexcited.
Mm-hmm.
Alison Pill hates her being there because, like, she's still, like, she's just angry with the way Scott treated her, and by extension, treating Knives.
Yeah.
So there's that. I didn't notice any of the racist stuff directed towards her.
There were a couple of moments. The one that sticks out was when someone called her Kung Pao Chicken. And I was like, ooh, really?
Oh, shit, who calls?
I can't... I have a feeling it was the... What's his name? Gideon. In the main fight at the end. And so my husband was like, well, you know, he's the villain, so maybe they're just trying to, you know, pile it on. But I was but it just doesn't feel right. It kind of sticks out. And there were just a couple of moments. Like, for example, And again, I get they're probably trying to make a point, but when Scott first starts going out with Knives, and he says this whole rambly thing about, can you even date outside of your race? And makes all these comments about Asian people. And I was like, what? I don't remember this. And I just feel like, in context with the rest of the film, it kind of sticks out a little bit.
Well, with Gizian, I would excuse that purely on the basis that he's... Like, if any of the other boyfriends had said it, it would have been weird. Which is why I think the way Thingy, what boyfriend number three was a bit too much. And I'll get back to him because the comic and the book, the biggest difference that I... Bear in mind I've only read the first three volumes, but the biggest difference that I've noticed so far is the third boyfriend in the book and the film, the difference there. So him punching Knives, that seems too far, whereas Gideon being racist to her, that seems like just showing him to be just vile. Scott's making references to her cultural stuff,
yeah,
I think would be to like show that, would be to like get sympathy for her because she's like besotted with him and he just does not care about
her. He just sees her as like a stereotype or something. Yeah.
So that would be my take on the racist things.
Right.
With her getting punched in the book, boyfriend number three, he does punch a woman and makes reference of, I'm a rock star, I can punch whoever I like, and it shows him as being a dickhead. But in the book, Knives doesn't get punched by him. Envy has a bodyguard who's this woman with a cybernetic arm. And she punches Knives and punches the highlights out of her hair.
Interesting.
I mean, I know it's not that much of like a difference. She still has like, she still gets punched.
Yeah, she still gets punched, but the power dynamic is slightly different when it's woman on woman violence as opposed to man on woman violence. That's an interesting choice they made, though. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but the and in the books as well. I hate being that guy who's going in the books, but
you know the books are so much better.
Yeah, in the books as well, Knives is like nastier. Like in well, not nasty, but she does like she has justifiable anger, but it's like misplaced, like
misdirected. Yeah,
yeah. You know, like in the film, she attacks Ramona at the end.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, in the books, by that time, she's like she isn't targeted. She isn't trying to annoy Scott or win Scott back. She's trying to kill Ramona because she stole Scott in her eyes.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
she's like consumed with vengeance more so, like getting punched in the head. It's not you. It's the sort of thing where it's not. It's not as, oh, good grief sort of thing. It's just like,
I just, it really stands out to me. Yeah. And it has done ever since I first saw it. I was like, what the hell? Like, I'm sure you're trying to make a point, but I'm not sure that you're making the point that you think you are. I don't know. It just sticks out to me. And it's interesting that even like it, the fight at the end with Ramona and Knives.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that kind of violence. You know, I'm fine with if she had been fighting the vegan ex-boyfriend, you know, fair play through, you know, because you're fighting. But she wasn't fighting. She wasn't doing anything. And he just punched her. And it just feels so, and because nobody really reacts to it, nobody, it's just, I don't know. It just makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider all the crap that Knives has gone through. But she does try to assert herself with her, you know, superhero leanings when she wants to go after Ramona. And I really like that.
Yeah.
It's just fun. And obviously they do the whole it's not her you should be angry at, it's Scott you should be angry at moment, which was good.
Yeah.
And the fights, oh my god, the fight, all of the fights are good.
Yes.
I love that whole thing of them bursting into coins.
Yeah, I really like that.
I love that. Like, it scratches an itch I didn't know I had. Like, every time it happens, I'm just like, Christ, that's satisfying. It's done so well. Yeah, I really like that. I think the fight sequences are really impressive.
Yeah.
They obviously did a lot of training for that.
Yeah, they would have done.
Yeah. And, oh, yes, the soundtrack. Okay, so I know that Michael Cera could already play the bass, but the rest of the band members had to learn to play those instruments. For real.
Okay.
Yeah. They're actually playing those instruments, which I think is pretty cool, because it would be so easy to just fake all that. But yeah. They didn't. They practiced like a real band. They went off and had band rehearsals and, you know... That's pretty cool, and I think that shows, because they work as a friendship group. You can see that they're comfortable with each other, and I don't know, you just buy into it a little bit more when the actors have already got that camaraderie and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack is epic as well. Yeah, my husband and I listened to that a lot in the car. And there's some great tracks on there. I'm trying to think of the band that did that Clash at Demon Head song. My husband loves that song. I don't. But that's been played a lot. Oh, and Frank Black from the Pixies wrote Ramona Sings, one of the songs on the soundtrack that I just love. It's amazing.
I will level with you, I cannot remember a single song from the film.
Really? Oh god, the soundtrack is so good. Yeah, I really liked that. And I really liked that, I know it's very heavy in video game iconography and whatnot, yeah. But I liked that they incorporated video game sounds into the score.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you've got like your Legend of Zelda music when it's all dreamy and everything, and then I don't know, little things like the little Sonic getting his rings noise, and just little things that I picked up on that I don't necessarily know what they're from, but I recognize them. And I think that's a cool, you know, just a cool little thing, cool little extra doing that.
I don't want to take this off on a mad tangent, but I have to ask now, because you've mentioned it multiple times. You like Sonic.
I do.
And I'm assuming old Sonic, like classic.
Yes. Not yes. The first three. Everything after that is shit.
Sonic and Knuckles is okay. I like, because my dad had a Mega Drive, so he has like the original, like. Yes. Cartridge where it opens
yes!
up and you put yes.
So do I. I've still got my old Mega Drive. The Mega Drive was the best.
I do like Knuckles in the third one though, where he's just like this random dickhead who's just showing up. I do like
yes.
him. Like the box art for that is fantastic, because you've just got like Sonic filling up most of the screen, and then like right down in like the bottom
yeah,
right corner.
Tiny little-
just like a little angry knuckle shaking his fist. But yes.
Oh, and Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. That was a good one too.
Yeah. I hated that, because I'm just not good at Tetris, so.
Oh, I see. I was addicted to the Bean Machine, which sounds like a euphemism. But it isn't.
All right.
But we won't go there. Continue.
When I was younger, me and my dad like started out on like this epic quest to complete Sonic Spinball.
Uh huh.
We did not win. Like, we did not get there. But yeah, so if you like old style Sonic, have you seen the Sonic film?
I have.
Oh shit! Really? Okay. What? God, this is a review for another time, but I'm interested. What did you think of it?
I thought it was a fucking delight.
Oh shit, really?
Yes! I surprised myself. I stuck it on thinking, this is going to be dreadful. Because generally speaking, films made from video games are not that great. Yeah. And it's Sonic, and I've got nostalgia there, so I'm resisting it. But I thought, no, I'll stick it on. And before I knew it, I was in. I was like, this is great. I'm loving this. What's wrong with me? Why is this? I'm in. Yes, more. Yeah, the only thing I wasn't sure about was Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik. But
yeah, no, that
we
was...
can get into that another time. Yeah. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I surprised myself. I had no idea.
Yeah.
There you go. Have you seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think?
I liked it.
Oh, okay, cool.
No, like, as you were saying, like, how much you liked it, I was like, oh, we should do this as an episode at some point, but...
Yeah.
Literally someone at work who I talked to about films emailed me, and they were like, oh, I saw Sonic, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I was like, mate, if it was as bad as you thought it was going to be... I was going to say, I think, yeah, like, video game, like, films based on video games, like, are on an upward curve now. Because you've had, yeah, Detective Pikachu, which was just amazing. And you've had Sonic. Detective Pikachu is really good, but, if I could make one change, get rid of Ryan Reynolds doing his Deadpool voice. As did you just squeak?
I said, what?
No, get rid of him. Because ever since doing Deadpool, he does that voice in every film, and it's starting to get old.
But okay.
Get rid of him, right? And then replace him with Danny DeVito. Doing, like,
yeah,
the Frank...
Yeah, I'd watch that. Of course I'd watch that. It's Danny DeVito. Come on. I'd watch that. But no, you don't replace Ryan... I mean, I know I'm not looking at Ryan Reynolds, but still his voice. You can't just... No. No. No.
Should have been Danny DeVito. Doing his Frank should've Reynolds voice.
Interesting. Well, I'll watch it and I'll let you know how I feel about this casting choice of Danny DeVito as Detective Pikachu.
It would have worked. It would have been a different film, but it would have worked.
Yeah, it would have been a very different film, I'm sure. But
okay, back to the point anyway.
Yes, back to the film at hand.
Yeah.
What else can we say? Blah, 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 blah. I've done all of that. Sorry, I'm just checking through my notes here to see if I've missed anything. Blah, 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 blah. No, I don't think I have missed anything there. It was shot in Toronto. And it was supposed to be Toronto, which is different because most films that shoot in Toronto are doing it pretending that the city is New York or, I don't know, Philadelphia, you know.
Yeah.
But it was shot in Toronto and it's set in Toronto, which is pretty cool. That's about all I can say about that. I just know that it's kind of a big deal.
God, David Cronenberg would be proud of it.
Right. Oh, and of course, Captain America, who wasn't Captain America yet.
Right? Oh, yeah. Nah, he'd just been the Human Torch twice.
The Human Torch. Oh, Fantastic Four, of course.
Yep.
Of course. I'm fairly sure I watched one of those films, but...
They're surprisingly good. Weirdly enough, the first two Fantastic Four films are through a weird twist of fate, are actually what the ones that are considered to be, in inverted commas, the good ones.
So... Okay. Interesting. I think I recognised him vaguely. What the hell is his name? Chris Evans.
Yep.
Yeah, there's so many Chris's that it's hard to remember who's who. Chris Evans. I'm fairly sure I recognised him, but didn't, you know, it wasn't anything mega, oh my God, this guy's in it. And it's interesting that, you know, he's gone on to be Captain America and, let me get her name right, Brie Larson has gone on to be Captain Marvel. Yep. Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, oh, there's more. There are more connections to other Marvel / DC comic book people. Can you think of any?
What,
in Scott Pilgrim? I swear there's more. There's so many links.
Oh, yes. There's one. There's one I could think of.
Yeah.
The vegan ex-boyfriend is Brandon Routh, who played Superman in Superman Returns.
No!
Uh-huh. Which I think, right, and on... Okay, let me start with the disclaimer. Yes, it's Superman Returns does have Kevin Spacey in it. I know we're not allowed to like him anymore, but he does a fine job in that. Yeah. Okay. It's one of those things, it's like, I know he's like, you're not allowed to like him anymore, with good reason, but I do think it's disingenuous when people go, I've always disliked him, I'm like, fuck off. But Superman Returns, I think, I really like that as a Superman film. I mean, I hated it at the time, because I think I went to see it when I was like a little kid, and I was like, yay, Superman, and he does nothing in this movie. But no, but I do think that's like quite a really good film, because it's like throwing back to the Christopher Reeve ones and XYZ. But and Kevin Spacey, I do think, was a really good Lex Luthor. But yeah, Brandon Routh is Superman in that.
You have actually blown my tiny mind with that bit of information. Okay. I had no idea that that was who that was. I haven't seen that Superman film since it came out. I remember liking a lot about it, but being very like, you know, this Superman sucks. He just does. And I'd have to rewatch it again to tell you why.
Fair enough.
Kevin Spacey was a really good Lex Luthor, and Posey Parker?
Yeah,
I always get her name wrong. Parker Posey, she was great. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, the guy playing Superman was a bit wooden and a bit. Ugh.
Oh.
You know.
Well, he's the third ex-boyfriend.
Wow! That's pretty amazing. I had no idea. I knew him from something, but I couldn't click what it was, and I didn't bother investigating.
Fair enough.
But there are more. I swear to God, Alison Pill has a connection to Marvel. And I can't think what the hell it is. And so does Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And it might be... No, it's not S.H.I.E.L.D. No. Damn, I can't think what it is. But there are... excuse me. There are loads of actors who have gone on to play superheroes. Put it that way.
I don't recognise either of them from anything I've seen. I mean, there is a link between Marvel and Alison Pill that's very convoluted.
Is there? Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of. I don't know.
It's not, because this is a weird strain of logic, I think.
Okay.
But I can do it. It's Alison Pill was in Miss Sloan with Jessica Chastain, and Jessica Chastain plays an alien in X-Men Dark Phoenix. That's the link.
Yeah, that's a bit of a 6 degrees of separation, isn't it?
It is.
I wonder if anything will come up on her IMDb that will make me go, ha ha! That's what it is, but possibly not.
Oh, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Of course, she's Huntress in Birds of Prey.
Yeah, there you go. I knew she had a connection somewhere.
I love that film so much.
Birds of Prey.
Yeah, loved it.
Oh, I've got no time for it.
I know, and I was like, oh, that's sorry. So sad.
Sorry. Like,
literally.
I wanted to like it so much. No.
It's weird, because there's like two people, like
on Twitter, and I was trying to work out, like, there's two uber feminist horror fans.
Uh-huh.
And one of them's you.
Okay.
And one of them is, you know, Claire Holland. She wrote...
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, she wrote Not Your Final Girl, the poetry book.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, her. You're, like, the two people who, if I had to describe you, it's, like, feminist horror fans. That's, like, how I know you.
I'll take it.
And I knew one of you liked Birds of Prey, and I knew, and I didn't know the opinion of the other one, and I was like, is it Moxie who likes Birds of Prey, or is it Claire? And I just couldn't remember, and I asked you, and you were like, no, I hate it. I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah. So disappointed in that film. Maybe that's another one we can talk about at some point. Maybe you can, because you're more into the comic book superhero stuff. You know more than I do about that. So maybe you can...
Birds of Prey, I
contextualize.
Don't. I know nothing about Birds of Prey. The comics. Oh, don't have put.
Okay. That puts an end to that.
I just thought it was really fun, and I loved, and I'll remember his name in a second, Ewan McGregor's Black Mask. You did.
Feelings, opinions. I'm just gonna say it.
Yeah.
He was just doing, what's that guy's name? Sam Rockwell from Charlie's Angels. Except to the extreme. And...
Hold on. Sam Rockwell from Charlie's Angels?
Yeah, the Charlie's Angels movies with Drew Barrymore and...
Oh shit, it's been years since I've seen those.
Lucy Liu and what... Oh, you should rewatch them.
Sam Rockwell's in it.
Yes, he's in the first one. And he's the bad guy. Oh, spoilers! Spoilers for a film that's like 15 years old or whatever.
I was gonna say I watched the reboot of Charlie's Angels recently, and I liked that, but I haven't watched the other ones in a long time.
I had totally forgotten about the reboot.
The reboot's fun. It's I liked Hugh McGregor in Birds of Prey, and it was like the one line got me, and it's where he's God, this is a tangent, but it's when he's like, he's gonna let the one person go,
mm-hmm.
and she's crying, and then he just goes, "Oh, is that a snot bubble? Okay, cut her face off." But yeah.
You lost it. I think I may have switched off at that point. Not literally switched off. I just mean like I switched my brain off and went, "This is crap. I'm out. It can be background noise while I work."
I mean,
perhaps.
There was insufficient Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Didn't fill your quota.
No, that does not. That I like that film, but it does not have the Winstead factor. I'm sorry.
I see. Oh, you know what we should do? We should talk about in a future episode, The Thing, and the remake of The Thing with Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
That doesn't have the Winstead factor either, but that's not because she's not in it enough. That's because it's fucking awful.
Do you think so? I quite enjoy it. And that's saying something.
I think the remake I went to see on my birthday one year.
Oh dear.
And it was like, because I'd seen the original quite recently, and I was like, I'll go and see this. It's a prequel thingy. And I didn't know who Thingy was at that point. Maybe it was Winstead. I was just like, let's go see this prequel. And I hated it. It's just a curse. It's just vile.
I love the original. I think it's, you know, a classic.
It's cool. It's his most beardy. I love it.
Yeah, so do I. But probably for different reasons.
Is your reason that you're horny for Kurt Russell?
It might be.
Because that is not a million miles away from what I am.
No one can resist a bearded Kurt Russell.
I still want to watch that film where he plays Santa, you know?
I watched that. It's surprisingly all right. Even though I don't particularly like Christmas as a time of year, I do love a Christmas movie. And it was surprisingly watchable.
Right.
But yeah, I quite like the remake of The Thing. I didn't like it the first time I watched it, to be fair. I was very, you know, dismissive of it. And then I rewatched it and surprised myself. I was like, actually, didn't mind that. I didn't have the visceral reaction that you did.
I've only seen it once, so that could be.
Well, perhaps a revisit, you know? Or we can trade off, because you hate the remake of The Thing. I already know I'm going to hate the remake of The Wicker Man.
Nah, you'll love it.
Well, I won't, and we can just smash them together and talk about remakes we hate on a podcast called Why We Love.
You know, I was thinking, the reason it's called Why We Love was because literally I was thinking, there's going to be a point where we run out of films that we both like.
Yeah.
So we need to have episodes that are called Why We Hate. But the reason I thought let's call it Why We Love was because I thought having a podcast just called Why We ...
Yeah.
Just sounded weird. Yeah. We should definitely do an episode called Why We Hate. Just
Why We Hate. Just throw it out there. Yeah. There's a lot that I could talk about, though, if it was a Why We Hate. Here's a list, an itemized list of reasons why I hate things like Blade Runner.
No.
Yeah, I said it. I said what I said. That's right. Don't at me, bro. Yeah, I don't like Blade Runner. I said it. I don't like it.
To be fair, I didn't like it the first time. I liked it the second time, and I like Blade Runner 2030, whatever.
I haven't bothered with that one. I may enjoy it. I don't know. It's just not really my thing.
I mean, it's long as fucking life, but like...
That's encouraging.
It's got more of like a sensitivity to it than the original does.
Yeah, I can imagine so, because the original is, I mean, I don't really want to get into it right now.
Fair.
But it's misogynistic, it's cold, it's just, I don't like it. Don't like it. And it's like my husband's favorite film, so
Okay, apart from like hating it, do you at least like, and I don't know why you would if you hated the rest of the film, because this bit will have no emotional resonance with you whatsoever, but do you at least like Rutger Hauer's speech at the end?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
I do. I can't look, I don't like the film as a whole. I've got issues with some of the scenes that were filmed and what was going on with the actors at the time. I have issues with the whole theme of the film, but I cannot take away the performances are excellent. It looks visually stunning.
Yeah.
It's just the meat and potatoes, if you will. I don't know why I said it like that. The meat and potatoes. It bothers me. It doesn't sit right with me, and I don't like that so many people think it's, you know, I don't know, amazing. I feel like people aren't always as critical of it as they should be, but hey, that is just one woman's opinion. So there you go. Thank you for coming to my sermon. Thank you for coming to my TED talk. Slides and pictures will be available in the gift shop. Yeah. That's a subject for another time. So have we talked about everything that we want to talk about with Scott Pilgrim? Is there anything that we've missed?
Just a couple of things, and these are things that I can cover quite quickly.
Right.
Because they're small things. First thing is just, and this is just like a little bit of that's cool. Whenever Ramona explains the like backstory of her and whoever the ex is of at that time.
Yeah.
You know the little cartoon bits?
Yes.
Those are like directly
from the comic novels. Book.
Yeah. They're Brian Lee O'Malley's artwork. That was the one bit, that was just a bit I was like, oh, that's neat.
It is cool.
Yeah. Oh, in the film, and I'm trying to remember this, but because I watched the film as I was in the middle of reading the graphic novel, stuff has like merged together. In the film, boyfriend number three, does he punch a hole in the moon for Ramona or for Envy?
I think, well, actually, weirdly enough, I read about this. I think in the film, it was boyfriend number three punched a hole in the moon for Ramona. But in the books, there are now two holes in the moon.
Yeah.
So he punched one in for Envy.
For Envy, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, where she's just like, where she's like, oh, is that why there's two holes in the moon?
Yeah.
Also, don't know if I've told you this ever before, and it's not something I usually like bring up because most of the time it's not relevant, but for this it is. I am a vegan.
Yeah, do you know, I thought you might have been, and funnily enough, when the film came out, I was a vegan too.
Hey, so I was cock-a-hoop when they were like, oh, being vegan gives you psychic powers. I was like, yes.
I love that, because, yeah, I was vegan at the time that the film came out, and I thought the whole vegan police thing was just brilliant.
Oh, yeah, that made...
So good.
I love that, because in the book, he's just an asshole. Like, he has the vegan superpowers, but he's, like, knowingly not vegan.
Right.
Whereas in the film, it's just, it comes across as if he's just a bit of a dumbass.
Yeah.
Which I... But yeah, the vegan police thing, I really like that.
Yeah, I really like that too.
And the other thing is, because Scott Pilgrim is mired in video game-ness, there was a... Well, first of all, well, in terms of video game-ness surrounding Scott Pilgrim, Telltale Games, which is a production company that I really liked, they approached Brian Lee O'Malley and went, can we do a game of the books?
Right. Yeah.
And he said no, because he didn't know how, like, he didn't think it was the right sort of fit, which I agree with. It would not have worked in any way.
Right.
But it's a shame because I love Telltale Games. I think they're so good.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, the Walking Dead games, they make me cry every time. But then Ubisoft, when the film came out, did a side-scrolling beat-em-up.
That's right, yeah.
With, like, Brian Lee O'Malley's art style, and you fight the evil ex-boyfriends.
Yeah.
And then Ubisoft, I think, lost the license, so they took the game down permanently. But I looked this up this morning. Mm-hmm. Brian Lee O'Malley and Edgar Wright, and I think it was like this year. Like,
is this the animation thing?
No, it was. It was May 2020, approaching the film's 10-year anniversary. Both O'Malley and Wright tweeted Ubisoft asking to bring the game back alongside a re-release of the film.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I would buy that game in a heartbeat. If that came if that came out on Steam, that would be the game that would make me go, okay, fine, I'll download Uplay.
Yeah, I'd probably play it too.
Not going to be fucking Assassin's Creed that's going to get me to download Ubisoft's shitty knockoff thing. But Scott Pilgrim beat him up.
I'm down for that. You just reminded me, actually, I was reading an article where someone was talking to Edgar Wright about Scott Pilgrim and would there ever be a sequel. And before, he'd always said no. But now he's saying that they've got plans, nothing solid, but they have ideas and plans for potentially doing an animated sequel to Scott Pilgrim.
Oh.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
It would, wouldn't it?
Especially if they did did it in, like...
In his style.
Yeah, in that style, because I love the artwork. I think it's amazing. Yeah.
It's really distinctive, his artwork.
Yeah, I do want to read his other stuff, because there's one he did which just came out as a single volume, which is about a girl who works at a restaurant and she gets like the power to like rewrite like bits of history, but she can like travel through time and stuff with like a mushroom or something along those lines,
right?
And that is drawn by him. But there's a comic out at the moment which has been running for a few years where he's not the illustrator, which is a shame because I do love his drawings, but he's the writer. But right. The premise is beautiful. It's called Snot Girl.
Right.
And it's about this girl who's an Instagram model.
Right.
But she has, like, literally every illness. She has them all at the same time. So she's just like...
Same girl, same.
Yes. Yeah, so it's just like she takes these, like, great selfies on, like, Instagram and stuff. But the minute the camera's like away from her, she's just like streaming with snot. That's like...
Interesting. That's gross, but
yeah,
kind of cool at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I don't think I have anything more to say, actually.
No, it's weird. We've been weirdly concise about this one.
We have, haven't we? Direct. Yeah. To the point.
Yeah. I mean, we did get to, like, boyfriend number 3 and then just stopped there, because that's where the most, like...
But... Oh, that's true. That's true. We haven't talked, like, in depth about each of the boyfriends and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be fair, 5 and 6 are twins and don't true. Talk. Don't so...
Oh, there goes the dog.
Oh.
Regular listeners will know. My dog has to make some sort of noise. I'm trying to think of something to say about the other boyfriends. I mean, they're all interesting and different and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that I can't remember. I think when they were directing, they were making the film, Edgar Wright had Brian Lee O'Malley on set just, you know, to hang around, I think.
Yeah.
And as it was being filmed, he was finishing off the final book.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it ends, but it looks as if it's going to be, like, close to the film, because it's called Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour.
Right.
And the picture on the cover is him holding the Sword of Love.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I think, we didn't talk about the different endings.
No. Yeah. Oh, I do like those endings. the different endings, they are cool.
I read a brief thing with Edgar Wright where he was talking about how early on in the script writing process that they toyed with the idea of Scott sort of being, how can I put this?
Oh.
Basically, he realizes that actually he's a serial killer and he's been going around murdering people, and that all the video game stuff and all the music and everything, that it's all in his head.
Yes, yeah. I did I mention that, like, in like as a tangent in like the Psycho 2 episode?
Could be.
Or did we talk about it off-air? Because I know I've definitely spoke to you about that ending.
Yeah, I'm sure we've talked about that. I can't remember, though, if it made it into an episode.
It would have been a cool ending, but...
Oh, yeah, totally.
It would have closed the door on the possibility of a sequel, though.
It would have reduced things a little. But it was interesting when I was Googling Scott Pilgrim, you know, you get those like Google suggested questions.
Oh, yeah.
The third one down was, is Scott Pilgrim schizophrenic? I was like, oh, clicking that. Come on. Somebody give me the deep dive to show me that actually Ramona Flowers doesn't exist and that all these things are just psychoses and hallucinations. But
God. No matter what fandom it is, no matter what property they're talking about, there will be a theory that basically says that whoever the main character is actually Tyler Durden.
Yes, that's true.
There's a 3-page essay that my dad printed off the internet because he loved it so much. He's a big fan of Fight Club, the film, because he loves David Fincher. And he's also a fan of Calvin and Hobbes. You know, have you ever...
Oh, yeah.
The cartoon where it's like a little kid with a tiger.
Tiger.
Well, he like printed out this 3-page essay, which was like this weird fan theory on the internet, which was that Calvin is Ed Norton's character and Hobbes is Tyler Durden.
Excellent.
Yeah. Which is... Yeah.
How the hell did we get there?
Scott Pilgrim, schizophrenic.
There we go. I just thought it was an interesting little thing that popped up that I wasn't expecting and made me go, I can see it. I could see it. But yeah, the endings, basically in one of them, he gets back together with Knives, and in the other one, he ends up with Ramona Flowers. Right.
What, in the film?
Yeah. Well, I say he ends up with her. They're not strictly going out, but he leaves with her. Did I watch a different ending?
No, he dies. He did the one ending. Gideon kills him. And then...
And he comes back because he's got his extra life.
Yeah. And, yeah, because when he fights with the power of love, he gets killed. Uh-huh. But when he fights with the power of self-respect, he wins.
He wins, yeah.
But, and he fights... you think he's going to fight Negus Scott.
Oh yeah, that's right. And they end up being friends.
Yeah, they're like busy mates. But Ramona's gonna leave, but Knives tells him to go after her, and then they leave together.
Yeah, but there is another ending where he ends up with Knives. He gets back with her.
And this is in the main film, or
in the it was like the original ending that they filmed was Scott getting back together with Knives,
in the film.
It's not the theatrical version. The one that they released in the cinema is the one where he leaves with Ramona Flowers.
Oh, okay, sorry, you were confusing me. Sorry.
Because
when you said different endings, I thought you meant like how there's like the two endings where in the one Gideon kills him, but then he comes back and he kills Gideon. Sorry.
Right, I see what you mean. No. Okay. Yeah, they had filmed the ending with Scott getting back together with Knives, and they showed it to a bunch of people, you know, the usual, what they call it, focus group.
Yeah.
And it came back as, no, we don't like that. He should be with Ramona. So they changed it, and that was reshot after the film was finished.
Huh. That's good. That's making me wonder how the graphic novels are in there.
Well, I couldn't speculate.
That's a point. In the original graphic novels, they're in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
They've since done colour versions, and I was like, there must have been rewrites because there's a whole joke now that you can't make because it's in colour. But in the black and white ones, they mention about Ramona dyeing her hair a different colour. And there's a bit where he goes, oh my God, it's something like she's changed her hair again. And it literally has like a little box with an arrow like pointing to them all going, this comic is in black and white.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got anything else to say about it, except if anybody out there is listening and they haven't seen the film, obviously we've just, you know, spoiled it all for you, but you should watch it. despite the fact that we've, you know, spoiled it for you. It's fun, hyper stylized action comedy, almost like a musical, you could argue, you know, with lots of band sequences and whatnot. I'm sure somebody out there could make the argument that actually it's a musical.
Yeah,
it's a great film. I mean, I know I criticized a fair bit of it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that I still think it's so much fun to watch, and it's just visually like eye candy. It's just, I don't know. It just is what it is, and I like it.
It's one of those films that, like, I mean, not all of it stuck with me, but like a large percentage of it did.
I think it would be a very different film if it hadn't been for Edgar Wright. I think he's the perfect fit for that film.
I guess.
Well, you know, like, just his style works so well with Scott Pilgrim, you know, like the quick edits, the quick cuts, the jokes upon jokes upon jokes. It's quite layered, you know. There's a visual joke on the screen as a character is saying a joke. There's a lot of spaced, I think, in Scott Pilgrim, and I think, yeah, Edgar Wright's style of direction just works so well with it. It's perfect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all I had to say. There's no more. did we decide on what we're going to talk about next week, or is that again going to be a surprise?
Well, before we get there, let's do. The regular and dumb part of the show, where we give it a rating out of 5.
Rating out of 5. Ugh.
Yeah.
Out of 5. Ugh, you're forcing my hand here. I would say it is a solid 4 out of 5.
Cool.
What about you?
Well, across this podcast, that is called Why We Love.
Yes.
I have given films 3 stars, I've given them 1 stars. I think I gave a couple 4 stars.
Uh-huh.
This one is the first ever 5-star film.
Five out of 5.
Yep.
I feel like there should be fireworks going off and girls in, you know, with flags and stuff. 5 out of 5. Wow. That's a first.
Yep.
That's, yeah. Well, good for you.
And we talked about this film before we talked about the remake of The Wicker Man, because spoiler alert with that star rating.
The first ever negative star rating. Like, yeah. I'm not gonna watch the remake unless you watch the original. That's the rules. That's the game. And I can't believe that you're even huffing and puffing about the possibility of watching it. Explain yourself.
No.
It's good. It's a classic. So folk horror awesomeness.
Oh, so it's the Nick Cage one, but for different reasons.
David. No. No. I don't wanna. I'm not gonna, unless you watch the original. I'm digging my heels in.
Aren't you excited to see why he goes, "You bitches, it was all for honey."
Honey. Well, it's no different from the "Don't you see burning me won't bring back your apples?" I don't know why I make him Welsh. Edward Woodward is not Welsh, but he does a somewhat
Hold on. You are saying, oh, watch the original. It's so much better, and they burn him to bring back apples.
Well, it's not to bring back apples. It's to bring back the harvest. But it makes sense. It's a sacrifice. I mean, I can't, it's a classic. It has everything. It has atmosphere. It has, oh, it's a bit sexy. It's a bit mysterious. It's a bit, ooh, what's going on here? And what an ending. I mean, come on. Come on, David. Come on. Meet me halfway.
Scott Pilgrim, everybody. What a film.
This is such bullshit. I'll go back in my box.
I will watch the original at some point.
At some point. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, who is this person? I'm going to ask. Who is this person? This demon. This man with wild opinions.
I'll tell you who I'm not. I'm not the person with the control of the podcast Twitter page. That's for certain.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I literally scroll through Twitter sometimes, and it comes up with why we love podcasts like this. I'm like, why?
Because you got to like things on Twitter. You got to get involved. You got to, you know, keep people up to date on movie stuff. You got to put the work in.
Oh, I'm sure. It's just like literally.
Playing the game. I'm playing the Twitter game. I'm not saying I like every movie or tweet that I've liked, but I'm playing the game.
It's fine. I don't think you've ever liked. I don't think you've liked anything where I've gone. Okay.
Okay. I'm sliding in the DMs here to.
Yeah.
That's fine. To get back on track, though. So you've given it 5 stars out of 5.
I've
given it a 4.
Yep.
Yeah, what's happening next week? Do we have a film, or shall we just fly by the seat of our pants, so to speak?
I don't know. That being said, Scott Pilgrim is one of those things where I was like, I at some point, not next week, obviously, because... Even for me, reading like 4 volumes of a graphic novel is tall order. But but once I've read them all, and I don't know, once they've re-released the video game or whatever, I do think it's a film / franchise / media entity that could be talked about again at some point.
Oh, definitely.
Not next week, though. That'd be a lot to happen in one week. But,
it would.
I don't know what to... Well, I hadn't thought of anything. But, and obviously this is the sort of thing that should be planned off air first, but because we both know that we both like Sonic...
Yes.
That film has recently come out on, like, DVD / streaming platforms.
Right.
So we could conceivably do that.
We could. I wouldn't mind talking about that. I wouldn't mind talking about The Thing, just the original, because obviously, you know, I don't want your blood pressure through the roof. I mean, I might watch the remake again, just to, you know, because I'm a swot. I need all the information. But yeah, Sonic sounds good.
Sure.
Could be fun.
Okay.
As usual, though, I just want to say thank you to anybody who's listening. I appreciate the support, and I hope that you enjoy the episodes, and I hope you come back and listen to the next one.
Yeah, I always... When I'm editing...
Yeah, me not so much.
No, like when I'm editing, I'm always thinking of the listeners. Uh-huh. You know, just thinking, fuck, man.
What? 2 people in Stevenage are listening to this and no one else.
Well, I was going to say, I've looked at the ratings, weirdly enough, and this is a damning indictment of us.
Uh-oh.
Although,
it's also a damning indictment of David Cronenberg. Psycho 2, I think that's had 22 plays.
Right.
Roughly. And Black Christmas has had 11? Something like that. Basically, okay. It's like 22 for Psycho 2, 11 for Black Christmas, 5 for Batman and Robin.
That's unsurprising.
No, I think that's surprisingly high, given that most of the show notes were about pegging. Right, and then Maps of the Stars. Maps of the Stars has like one.
Yeah.
Listen, but then what was the one we did last week?
Sky High.
Sky High has 5. So it's going back up.
Interesting.
Because people thirst for films with the Winstead factor. That is why it is.
Well, if that's true, then the Thing remake is on the table. What are the rules, David? What are the rules for this?
The rules. Okay. Do you want to hear my, like, here's a fun addendum to the podcast. Do you want to hear my two bullshit cinematic theories?
Go on.
The one is the not Laura effect.
Okay.
And the not Laura effect is in Twin Peaks in the first season. No, it's the second season. They introduce Laura Palmer's cousin.
Yes.
Who is just the actress in a wig.
Yes.
And I couldn't remember what her character was, so whenever I was talking about it to my dad, I'd go, oh, blah, 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 not Laura did this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't remember her name.
Yeah.
And I think there was a film that came out called The Forest, which is a horror film with Natalie Dormer.
Oh, Natalie Dormer, yeah.
It's not great.
No, it's not.
I mean, I liked it, but it's not great. And in that, she plays twins. One has blonde hair and one has black hair.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they didn't have a budget because there's a bit where the two of them have a conversation with each other and, oh boy, it is shot badly.
Right.
But I said at the time, I was like, oh, it's the not Laura effect because, you know,
yeah,
two identical people, blonde hair, black hair. Mm-hmm. That's the one bullshit theory. The Winstead factor is it has to be, it's a film with Mary Elizabeth Winstead in where mm-hmm. she's one where she's a main character and uh-huh. her presence elevates a film.
Interesting. Okay.
So Sky High, she's a main character and she elevates that film, I think.
Okay.
Whereas Birds of Prey, I think it's good, but it doesn't have the Winstead factor because she's only in it for about, like, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
10 Cloverfield Lane, excellent film. That could go either way because she's a main character and I do think she's brilliant in it, but I think that film in and of itself is fantastic and I think would probably be fantastic with a different, like, female lead. So that one could go either way. Although I would probably say it has the Winstead factor because she's particularly excellent in it.
She is. I really like 10 Cloverfield Lane. I'm not wild about the ending, but I do like it. I think it's a great film.
Yeah. And The Thing doesn't have the Winstead factor because even though she's amazing in it, she does not like elevate that film because there was so much working against her.
Okay. I see. Yeah. I see. Okay. I'm trying to look through her IMDb to... She doesn't really seem to do a lead character all that often. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's often a secondary character, it would seem.
Yeah. Which is a travesty.
She is good. She is. I like her. I don't... You know, I'm not obsessed with her like you are, but I'm not obsessed,
I'm healthily interested.
Yeah. Yes, let's... What?
I saw the premiere for this film. Scott Pilgrim.
You saw the premiere?
Mm-hmm. Not the, like... The, like,
you know, where they all come out and they're on the red yeah. carpet. I saw that.
Oh, how can you have left that out?
I don't know.
Super interesting. Did you see all the people?
I saw Michael Cera. You didn't look like Michael Cera. And I saw Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who didn't look like Ramona.
Aww.
And I was just like, I love you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I've seen two interesting film-related things in London. That's one of them, the premiere of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And the other one is we saw a segment of a Jason Statham film being filmed.
Oh, wow.
Which is great. Love Jason Statham.
I don't mind him in a few things. I'm not a big fan, but I don't mind him in a couple of things. I met Edgar Wright.
I talked about
that in another podcast, maybe, I think. Because The World's End, a lot of it is shot in my town.
Oh, that sounds like something you've told me.
Yeah. And we watched a scene being filmed, and I got to meet Edgar Wright and Nick Frost.
Mmm.
Mmm.
That's cool.
Yes. I saw Simon Pegg there, but I didn't get a chance to say hi. But that was fun. That's a little link to Scott Pilgrim there. Yeah.
Cool.
Are we all talked out?
Yeah, we are now. I think we've, we've exhausted everything.
Yeah. So before we run into any more tangents and off-topic nonsense, yeah. as we are known to do.
Oh, yeah, we were saying goodbye and yeah. thank you to the...
Anyone who's listening.
Yeah.
All five of you. I appreciate it. I do.
I appreciate it only if those five people are listening to it voluntarily.
Or don't have guns to their heads.
Yeah.
I don't force anyone to listen, but I do know a couple of my friends listen. So, hi Sinead, again. Hi Lyndon. There's bound to be someone called Dave listening. Hi Dave.
I don't count.
No. Yeah, but that's Dave, not David. Not David. That's how I refer to you to my husband. Just so you know.
What, in that voice?
Yeah. Because we slip into accents quite easily in this house, and I like to call you David. I'm going to go do my podcast with David. Yeah. Well. I often start doing, is it Maureen from, do you know Inside Number 9 in Psychoville?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there's a character in that, a woman whose son's called David.
Oh, God, yeah, no, yeah. No,
yeah, David. So I've often slipped into that kind of, you know, northern-esque accent.
Fuck.
You're welcome, David.
Oh, stop it, please.
Come on now, David.
Oh, God, stop it. Well, thank you to Sinead and Lyndon for listening. I hope you don't hate me too much. I always worry about that when someone says, oh, my friends listen to this. I'm like, oh, are they just there going... Do they just come up afterwards and just go, hey, you said some really interesting things. Why have you shackled yourself to that more?
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah, they've been enjoying it, I've got to say. It sounds genuine, at least, when they say that they enjoyed it. But they are biased. Yeah. The point is, you know, somebody out there is listening to us, and I'm grateful for that listening time.
Thanks, dudes. Okay, so next week we are discussing the erotic thriller of the decade, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Seems so.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I hope you guys listening will join us next week, and I can tell you all about why I think it's brilliant. Although, who knows, things might have changed. I might rewatch it and decide, was I high? Did I take too many painkillers that day? What was I thinking? So we'll find out.
I'll be you blitz out your face on ketamine while you're watching Psych.
You and your ketamine. Sponsored by ketamine. Honestly, people at home, I've never even seen ketamine, let alone taken it. I promise. Of all my dabblings, that's not one. yeah. Okay, catch us next week.
Oh, speak to actually, you soon. Before we go, if 10 people listen to this, that's all I'm asking, 10 people, and it has been done before. If 10 people listen to this, I will find and read erotic Sonic fan fiction on the next episode.
Well, who can resist? We are but flesh and blood. My God, what erotic Sonic fiction? This has taken a turn.
Look, I'm not going to read all of it because the ones that exist are like over like 22,000 words long.
No. Look. I'm going to be Googling that later. I'm having an early night.
I've never read or written any, but I'm guessing it exists.
Everything exists. If you can think of it, it's out there. And on that, you know, positive note, we should end this.
Do you want to end it? The last bit of the podcast, do you want to end it quoting one of your favourite video games?
Finish him!